Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
I'm Greg Bresnitz.
And I'm Darren Bresnitz. We're the host of Snacky Tunes.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is August 12th, 2014. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. It's the middle of August and we're having some fun. Brooklyn Magazine awarded the best of New York IPAs. And one of the representatives tonight is Jeff O'Neill from Peekskill. He's here. We're going to talk a little bit about the old days when he was just starting out. And we'll talk more with TalkBeer.com guys and a few other brewers in the show. So here we are, thanks to GreatBrewers.com, our sponsor. And again, big shout-out to HeritageRadioNetwork.org. All right, Jeff O'Neill from Peekskill.
Hi, Jimmy.
Great to see you, man.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
I think the last time I saw you was the Wythe Hotel during New York City Beer Week.
Yeah, what a blast that was.
Yeah, no, yeah. You did some great stuff. The event we did was the New York City Brewer's Choice, mm-hmm. and a number of brewers made beers with New York ingredients and New York grains. What beers did you make for that event? Because I remember they really stood out in my mind.
We had made the Aristocrats, which was a fully New York State ingredient beer, right down to the yeast. It was a house yeast from, a really important New York State brewer. So it was a lot of fun. The beer was really well received, and we had a great time there that night.
Yeah, no, you did a really great job. A lot of brewers, Kelso, Omegang, people really rose to the occasion, and we hope to do more of that. It's been a growing thing in New York State.
And I think there will be more and more opportunity with more farmers growing the ingredients that we need. That was we did the show that week, correct? When we had
yes.
the farmers here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was wonderful to meet them and have that connection with them moving forward.
So a couple of things I want to ask you about. We've had some guests on recently, Chris Sheehan from Gun Hill. And in the past, Roger Davis from Faction Brewing. Seems that you guys all got started in the Bay Area, and there's two places that stand out, Drake's mm-hmm. and the 20 Tank?
The 20 Tank Brewery, yeah.
Yeah, so tell us about those places, because they seem to have the number of brewers that we know got started there.
Well, those are two of, I think, the seminal California-style breweries. Drake's started as Lind Brewing. It was founded by a guy named Roger Lind, and it had to have been mid to late 80s that he opened. Some of his brands bore the Sir Francis Drake and other, you know, Drake's monikers. And he sold the brewery to a coffee roastery that was located next door around 1999. And it became, they renamed it as Drake's because it was no longer owned by Roger. So they put a lot of resources into it. And at the time, I was coming from another brew pub in the East Bay called Jupiter, and that was owned by the same family that owned the 20 Tank, which had closed the year before, but was one of the first, I say, California-style brew pubs. It, you know, great pizza, fresh hoppy beer, and it was the first time, you know, I was in my early 20s at the time when I started working there at the 20 Tank before Drake's. I got all out of order here. But that was the first time I really had a modern IPA. I don't want to put too much of a location on it.
Well, I have never really had the chance to just sit and talk to you. And we're waiting for a few other guests. So that was my first question about Drake's in 2010.
So yes, a lot of brewers who have gone on to prominent roles in craft brewing started at those two places. You mentioned Chris and Roger, Dave Yarrington from Smutty Nose, my friend Burt Boyce, who has a management position in the Boston Beer Company, and some few others. And Drake's has grown over the past few years with a lot of reinvestment and opening up of contiguous space to where they are. And I think they're making close to 20,000 barrels now. And it was a 2,000-barrel brewery in 2000 when I was there.
So you, as brewers, you stay tight with a lot of guys. So mm-hmm. earlier you said you were texting with Roger Davis.
Yeah, Roger and I are planning a trip to Yakima next month.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So did he get opened?
Yeah.
At Faction
yeah.
Brewing?
Oh, yeah. And he's blown up. His biggest problem is that he can't keep up with demand. I don't know if you know this story, but he bought the original Captain Lawrence brew house. Scott's another guy who I have a connection to from Drake's. The guy who replaced me there turned out to be his college roommate. So there's a lot of like familial things with it.
No, that's wild. That's actually when one of our regulars was Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger, and she met Roger Davis, and for the same reason, he was here on the East Coast buying the old Captain Lawrence system.
Right.
And that's when we met him as well.
Right.
So I'm trying to play it. There's a lot of cool connections that you guys have, and I know there's a lot of great stories.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great stories, but I can't tell them here.
You're so good, man. Well, one of the themes tonight is there was, with Brooklyn Magazine, there was the best New York IPA competition. Some of our friends like Josh Bernstein and Nico Cremitas were some of the judges. And I mean, I guess we should announce them now since we can tell everyone. According to Brooklyn Magazine, the top three New York IPAs were Peekskill's Eastern Standard IPA, Other Half Hop Showers, and Port Jeff Party Boat. And
look who's here.
Our buddy Mike from Mike Philbrook. I never know your last name because you're Mike at Port Jeff.
What's up,
buddy? To me, from Port Jeff Brewery in Port Jefferson. Everyone said you were the surprise winner. I mean, you're the third place. But were you surprised, or did you think you're making pretty good beers anyways?
Oh, we're a little surprised. I mean, it was definitely honoring that blindly people chose that. So yeah. Sorry.
That's good. Well, we're drinking Hop Commons. Jeff didn't bring any beer, so we don't get to try the Eastern Standard IPA.
No,
did you bring any
beers on draft here?
So we can try some
at Roberta's.
What do they have here?
You know, this place, God bless them, they were our number one retailer last year. Our single best account.
Wow.
So it was a good bet that we're going to find something on here.
So what's the IPA they have on draft here?
We have Tiger Mom, which is a Brettanomyces IPA that we made with the folks from the Blind Tiger last month, or possibly in June.
All right. And Mike, I know you and Jeff both went to Siebel Institute in Chicago.
Right.
That's how you're... Now, tell us about that, because I'm trying to get a little background on you guys.
Well, Siebel, when I was a home brewer for quite some time, and then when I decided to, to go pro, I guess they say, I had taken a couple courses at Siebel. They have a Start Your Own Brewery course. They have a...
they have an entrepreneur's course.
Right, yeah. Yep. So I took a couple of those, and then I took their basic... it was actually through online at that time, and then you went there for the course of 2 weekends, I guess 5 years ago or what have you. I have guys that have been at our brewery that have taken the actual course where they go to Domans as well. Mm-hmm. So they spend 6 weeks
in Germany.
Yeah, 2 weeks in Germany, I think 4 weeks in Chicago. It's, you know, there's a lot of science behind it in that course. And, you can be in that course with people from Labatt's or, you know, very large breweries to people that have a nano setup of, you know, a half barrel or a one barrel, that are just going there to kind of get science out of it.
Yeah. Do you guys know how they judge the IPAs? Because we also have the guys from TalkBeer.com here. We're going to talk a little bit about how people judge and rate beers in the show as well.
I think they did it pretty, what do you call it, hedonistically? Hedonically?
You think someone said, I like Jeff's Peekskill beer, and someone else said, I like Port Jeff?
I saw a video, and it seemed like that they were tasting beers, and they kind of had a number count.
Right.
To some degree.
Like they assign some number of points to.
Right. So if you choose this beer first and it gets that many points, and then the total of points wins the race, I guess. So.
It seemed like it was probably 10
right.
points for.
Well, yeah, exactly.
It was kind of big news. It was Brooklyn Magazine's best IPAs. I think, is this Mike?
It is.
Mike Conklin, the editor of Brooklyn Magazine, just walked in. So
this is.
Come on. You got to talk on the mic. Come on in.
Sure.
So we're just trying to talk about how you guys, because we're also going to talk later about how different online sites rate beers.
Okay.
So this is kind of from what you created.
Yeah,
so tell
sure.
us, how did you guys judge the IPAs?
How did we judge them?
Yeah.
Well, the idea was that we were only going to be judging them based on, you know, what was in front of us. So just looking at the aroma and the appearance and ultimately the taste. And then so we had 5 judges and we had 10 beers. So I had everybody rank them. We assigned letters to them. And then I had everybody rank them from 1 to 10, basically. And then we used a scale where if you ranked something number 1, it received 10 points, and if you ranked something number 10, it received 1 point.
So it was like kind of the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
Major League, like All-Star or whatever, like MVP or something.
Yeah, MVP, yeah.
So it wasn't like one of these BJCP or other type of judging.
Did they know what 10 beers they were?
everybody knew which 10 beers were part of the testing, the tasting, yeah.
But they didn't know which ones they were tasting.
Correct.
Yeah. So what did you think? I mean, you tasted how many different, you tasted 10 different IPAs from New York.
10 IPAs, yep.
And are you familiar with all of them? Are you a big beer guy?
I am, yeah. I had all of them except for Party Boat, actually.
And you liked it. Let's pop that, Mike.
Right. Sure, I'd love to.
Poor Jeff. And in general, without, you can not, you know, screw up your awards, but yeah. What were your favorites?
Well, I...
You were the lone dissenter.
Embarrassingly, I was the only... of the five judges, I was the only one who did not have Eastern Standard as number one. I had Other Half's Hop Showers as number one. I did have Eastern Standard as number two, though. So, yeah, those are obviously wonderful beers. And I was really impressed by Party Boat. I really love Single Cuts Half Stack. I think that's a really great beer. And then Great South Bay's Field 5. I think that rounds out the top five. Yeah, those are kind of the ones, to be completely honest, I was surprised by Port Jeff. I think a lot of people thought Barrier's Money would come out a little higher than it did, but...
Barry makes a lot of good beers.
They sure do. Yeah.
I think their favorite IPA for me, I mean, it's the one that's rye. And they changed the name.
Oh, it was like the Sierra Nevada Evil Giant.
Right. Yeah, the Evil Giant. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they make so many good beers. But we got Oz and Gene from talkbeer.com here too. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And, so Oz, we know you from, you know, we've had you on the show before. And I know you know a lot about beer. Of the beers they're talking about, what are some of your favorite IPAs from New York?
I absolutely do love the Peekskill stuff going on. Eastern Standard, I was lucky to try Higher Standard when it was still sitting in the bright tank, and that was lovely.
Wait a minute. How did that happen?
just happened to be touring around there and got a lucky
Oz
day
brought
there.
His dad's here. These guys, talkbeer.com, they brought like four guys.
Well, we're community based, so that's definitely what we're aiming for here.
Yeah, we travel with a posse. All the time.
So, yeah, Jeff, talking about Higher Standard and stuff. I mean, are you going to distribute more of the beers that you make? Because you've made so many great beers.
You know, we're at our essence is that we're a brew pub, so we're not really set up to do a ton of variety that way. We've been doing a quarterly, like a one-off thing that you've seen around. In fact, that's one of the beers they have on here tonight. So we're going to be doing a little bit more of that, where it's a limited release of something. But for now, we're sticking with the three core brands, and I think they're getting to where they need to be.
What are the three? Eastern Standard and Simple Sour?
Eastern Standard, Simple Sour, and Hop Common.
Okay,
so
cool.
An IPA, a sour, and a lager.
Right.
And Hop Common's a sleeper, isn't it?
Yeah, Hop Common's on here, and it goes great with food. It's just an outstanding food beer, and it's a California style beer.
Well, I saw the Happy Hour Guys video of you and your cool ship.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit how that works. I mean, I thought you only use it for sour beers, but you use it for every beer.
We use it for all of our works, and you know, while we're talking about it, most of the beer we make are hoppy ales. So what we primarily use it for is heavy late hop dosing. At a lower temperature. So by its nature, when the wort floods into it, creates a lot of surface area, heat wants to get off of that surface area. So we flash off a lot of heat right away, and we'll get a 20 or 30 degree temperature drop just over the course of filling it, depending on the ambient temperature. And then we do a heavy hop addition at a lower temperature than most brew houses allow for. So I think it volatilizes less of the hop aroma compounds. That's my theory anyway. And it's what I think is the commonality in the hoppy beers that we make.
That's awesome. Yeah. I figured you only use Cool Ship. Something I learned from that video. I thought people only use Cool Ship for sour beers.
100 years ago, every brewery had a Cool Ship. That was how they cooled down their wort. Now it just doesn't make sense primarily for space considerations. But for us, it's a twist on a classic thing. We're not, slaves to brewing tradition. It's kind of a way to use an old antique vessel in a forward-thinking way.
You know, it's funny. There's so many traditions of beer. We were talking about the guys in Be United up in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. They opened the OEC. traditional
yeah,
brewery.
No, and they have a beautiful new brewery up there. You were there recently, so I don't know if we need to talk about them much more than that, but they're using their cool ship more for those, I guess, antique styles that people like to get really romantic about, like a la Cantillon or other lambic style brewers. They're really doing open fermentation in it. There have been a handful of beers that we've done that for, but it's not the biggest part of our portfolio.
Right. And Mike at Port Jeff, I mean, what's your setup like over there? Because I've had a lot of your beers. I really like them.
We have a straightforward 7-barrel system. We go to 14-barrel fermenters. So it's not a big setup, but we keep it pretty occupied. it's a direct-fired kettle, so it's very similar to something you'd probably see in a brew pub. It's that size, but we're using it for production, mainly because of the space that we have, you know, the space constraints.
And then you make different IPAs, don't you?
Yeah, we started on the IPAs kind of late after we opened. We started with a couple different styles prior to breaking out into IPAs. Some of that was because of hop reasons, being able to get the hops that we wanted to use. And then kind of another reason was just to, you know, everybody seemed to have IPAs at that time, especially on Long Island. So we took a little bit of a different approach and filled in some of the gaps with different styles when we started production. But now we make three IPAs pretty much throughout the year. It's the Party Boat is all year round. And then we go back and forth with another IPA that's a little more sessionable called Launch. And then I brought the new one today, too, which is a double red IPA, where we use a hop backing or a hop jack technique with whole cone hops.
Let's pop that. Let's taste that now. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Hey, we're out here in Bushwick, Brooklyn, in the back of Roberta's. Come on out, get a pizza. Maybe you can try on draft some Peekskill Hop Common and the special Tiger Mom Brett IPA. Pretty awesome place. I'm schwitzing out here. We've had a really great summer in New York, but now it's the humid day, and I'm just sitting here schwitzing. So who wants to talk about schwitzing and beer? I don't know. When you guys make beer, I mean, you're doing the cool ship, Jeff. Isn't that like all steam in a room?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't want to spend very much time in there. But it's contained. It's contained in a ventilated room.
And for you, Mike, what's like the hottest day you ever had in a brewery?
Well, fortunately in our brewery, which doesn't happen in many places, the brew house itself is actually air conditioned.
Oh.
And that's because it's so cold. And brewers that come in see us, they're like, holy cow, I can't believe you did this. But the reality is the brew house and the tank farm is only about 600 square feet or 700 square feet, and the tanks take most of that space. So cooling, it's not that hard. We don't air conditioning while we're boiling. But soon after, that thing goes right back up.
So do you only buy regular strength Gold Bond?
We do use regular strength Gold Bond, and there is two applications per brew regardless, just because you're marching up and down that tank farm most of the day.
This is awesome. You guys are cool.
I got to say, I've been up in that room with that cool ship at Peekskill, and it was
hot
day.
How did you get in there?
I know.
You watched the video. Everyone's been there.
When you're standing in there, as hot as it is and everything else, it's just the rusticity of it. You can't even help but feel like you're at another time where beer is being brewed. You're up there. It's dripping. You just feel like you're somewhere totally different than this century. It's very cool.
Cool.
Yeah, man. Cool stuff. Wait, you guys, talkbeer.com, Gene and Oz. Here's your chance. One thing you guys are going to do is what? You're going to talk about how do people rate beers online? You know, there's what? Beer Advocate, Rate Beer. Yeah, how do people actually rate beer? And then does it really matter?
Well, and what we've found, a lot of people have an issue with the way beers are being rated these days. I think the core issue is that, well, there's probably two. First of all, a lot of people rush through it. A lot of people just want to tick off as many beers as they can possibly try, you know, like achievements in a video game or something. And so once you've done that 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 times, you kind of lose sight of what's important about beer. And that is just sitting down and enjoying it and taking your time to think about it. And secondly, a lot of people tend to rate from the heart, which is great, but then you lose a little bit of that objectivity. And when people go and look up a beer on one of these sites, they see a number, and it's just one number, and it incorporates a lot of people's personal opinions, personal feelings, and doesn't always give you the most objective possible rating. So there's a lot of things that we think could be probably improved about the way beers are rated and thought about, and so we're working on it.
I mean, how do most people judge beers or rate beers?
Well, this sort of gets at the heart of why I wanted to do the blind taste test that we did, because I was sort of struck by this idea that the degree to which hype and brewery reputation played into how people rate beers or how, you know, what people say they think about beers. You know, the best example is Hetty Topper. So it's this like universally adored IPA that at the end of the day it's just an IPA. I mean, it's really great. It's like, it's an amazing beer, but it's sort of weird to think about the fact that this is just an 8% IPA in a world where there's just countless 8% IPAs, and everyone has decided that this one is the best. And it's interesting to me to start thinking about what plays into that. And a lot of it is the fact that you can't get it anywhere. So people dedicate so much time to thinking about these beers and reading about them and wondering how they're going to get their hands on them. And then eventually they take this long car ride or they meet somebody who's passing through this tiny town in Vermont. And, you know, they eventually get their hands on one of them. And after you've dedicated all that time to it, to thinking about it, it's sort of a bummer to then be like, not so great. So, of course, you know, you eventually taste this beer and you're like, this is the greatest thing I've ever had. Five out of five. So, you know, again, not to take anything away from that beer, but I think that that's a real thing that has taken hold in how people rate beers, is taking into account, like, the rareness and obscurity. And I think that that's started to sort of happen a little bit in New York. Again, not taking anything away from Other Half, I wound up ranking them number 1 out of 10, and I love all their beers. But I felt like they had just sort of recently been like christened, like they could do no wrong here in New York. Everything they did, everybody just like accepted that it was like, no question, it was perfect. And so I just kind of wanted to get at the heart of like why that was happening. And, you know, that's why like Port Jeff coming out so high, like that's exactly what I wanted to happen. Cause I don't think of Port Jeff as the kind of brewery where people are like, you know, it's not like super hyped, you know, right. People don't go crazy for it, but that was important to me for people to taste, you know, one of your beers and a Great South Bay beer and be like, yeah, this is delicious. This is great. It's just as good as all these other ones. So, yeah.
Well, in terms of our brewers, so Mike and Jeff, how do you guys feel about rating sites? I mean, do you guys as brewers monitor the sites? Do you have staff who are trying to, you know, or you just make beer?
I don't nearly as much as I did when I was younger. I care much less. The one thing I want to piggyback on what you're saying is freshness is the king with this beer. So Hetty has this advantage of it's, well, they've got this to this point, but the beer's fresh. It's gone on day one.
Yep.
Other Half also has that.
Totally.
It's an advantage for them. They work directly with all of their accounts.
Right.
They are on top of getting a fresh keg right in place of that last one. They're not lining a wholesaler's warehouse. They're still incredibly small.
Yeah.
So they're nimble and they're able to work with places on a very personal, like it's a, like a white glove thing that they're doing,
right?
And that really has a huge influence with hoppy beers. Like,
definitely.
It can't, like, there's a difference between a day old beer and a week old beer.
Sure.
There's a huge difference between a week old beer and a month old beer.
Right.
So that's, I think, probably played a lot into.
Yeah, definitely.
Like a growler that got picked up at our place over the weekend versus a can that had been
made a couple of weeks ago. It can be night and day.
It's different. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, no, this. And what about for you, Mike, about ratings and all that?
Well, first of all, I totally agree with what Jeff said. I think that's one of the aspects that, for our beer at least, it's great. A lot of, you know, even I deliver a lot of our beers myself, and I go into a walk-in and I look at the different collars on the beers, and I see that ours is one of the freshest ones, and that makes a huge difference because it tastes the way that it did, you know. People ask me at the brewery, what's your favorite beer? It's the one that just came out of the tank.
What I drink. Do they have dates on the keg collars?
Yeah, we date everything. Yeah. So, and you know, obviously, I know when things came out or what have you. But as far as ratings go, I mean, I try to keep my staff away from rating sites. I look at them from time to time, but you know, there's a couple different things that go on. You have guys that rate beers very well, and then you have guys that get on there or girls that get on there and they trash beers for whatever reason. And you know, I don't know. I'd rather look at a BJCP sheet that somebody has some constructive criticism, but even that sometimes is.
And I don't care about one rating so much as the
bulk of
20
them.
Of them together.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That's a much better rating.
Right, and that's the thing is, you know, as we've grown over the past 3 years, now we have more ratings for certain beers, and you can kind of see like, oh yeah, that is a good beer, and that one's not as good of a beer, so to speak, at least according to that particular community, you know. So depending on what the site may be that rates it.
All right. So what's Talk Beer going to do that's different?
Yeah, well, we're going to do a couple things. I think one of the big focuses is going to be on trying to distinguish the difference between how rare or how hyped do you consider this beer, and then how good do you consider this beer. You know, distinguishing those, making someone think about that as two different things, I think is really important. Secondly, we're going to stay probably pretty far away from the rapid fire review 100 beers in a night kind of thing. If you're running around at a beer festival, you've already tasted 75 2 ounce samples of, you know, 10% sour beers with a pH of 2. And then you have, you know, something really subtle like a session ale. You know, then your last beer is a 3.9% session ale or something. It's not probably the right environment for you to be rating that beer.
Where'd you go, Jeff?
Oh, to Belgium comes Cooperstown.
Oh, you were in Cooperstown.
Yeah,
that was this weekend's adventure.
I saw photos there of the Port Jeff van driving up there.
We did, and we caught
first
some
year I missed it. We were there for 4 years straight. We missed it.
Yeah, I didn't see you there. But you could have seen our couch. We got a lot of hype for it.
I'll be back next year. Well, this is kind of an interesting show. We've been talking about IPAs, and Michael, you're really the guy that got this started. How did you put together that panel? Because you got some interesting people.
Yeah, Josh Bernstein. Obviously, I think has he been on the show before or no?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just kind of went through my email and figured out who the people were that I had corresponded with about beer. And Nico, I actually listened to his episode on here just a couple nights ago. Nico Kremitas, just a beer writer. Done a lot of stuff on Long Island and now here in Brooklyn, too. Josh is obviously everywhere. He's got his two books. And then we had Meredith from Bearded Ladies, who's great. She actually wrote a story for Brooklyn Magazine today. Yeah, and then we had Zach from Alphabet City Beer Company, and he was great, too.
Zach Mack.
Zach Mack.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, some good people. I was really proud of you. Yeah, there's one beer that the Talk Beer guys brought that, Jeff, you mentioned. It's like a new upstate brewery that I wanted to open on the air because everyone has said good things about it, and I've never tried it.
I mentioned it?
You did. You guys, which one was it, Gene?
The Plan B.
The Plan B.
Oh, yeah. I have a couple of these at home.
Who wants to tell me about Plan B? Because I haven't had it yet.
Well, Oz, you were just up there, right? You got a lot of time in with.
Well, Evan's a good friend of mine.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, lead it
so
off.
Go ahead. You've been there as a customer. He's a friend of mine.
Was he at PQ or no? He was somewhere else.
No, he was at Captain Lawrence.
At Captain
Lawrence. Yeah, I was actually just up there on Saturday. He had his release for this beer. It's called Precious. It's a lambic style beer on aged on apricots. Oh, and it's gushing a little bit. But yeah, that just traveled from Jersey up here, so sorry about that. But he has an awesome setup there. I think he's doing
Mike
one barrel.
Mike from Port Jeff opened it with his lighter. That's another show, how to open beer without a barrel.
So, yeah, he's got an awesome setup there, single barrel. He's doing the brewing there, barrel aging himself. Tiny little farm that he has right next to his house, and he sets up a road stand right in front of the place. We got there a little early because we knew it was only a 10-case release, and basically we got to sit around and watch chickens walk in the yard, and he's got his own little bee nest there, and it's a really awesome place. I mean, couldn't be friendlier people, and I believe he's using 100% New York State ingredients, which is pretty awesome.
What town in New York is it?
Fishkill.
Yeah. Fishkill.
It's the closest brewery to my house.
And so you're buddies with him, Jeff?
Yeah, I've known him for
Tell us about what he's doing in Europe.
Well, I mean, he's the ultimate nano farm brewer right now. I mean, he's going out of his way to source all the New York ingredients that he can, and he's hustling around farmers markets, selling every one of these by hand. So it's a really, you know, it's kind of through the looking glass, like this wasn't possible to do just a few years ago. And he's one of the first, I think, full-on, you know, possessors and users of the farm brewery license. Like, he's taking it to a level that nobody else has yet on a very small scale.
So he's doing all New York State ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's awesome. You guys are so cool. You got so much more to talk about. In fact, Finback missed out on the Brooklyn Magazine IPA competition. They sent in a special beer. When we come back in a few minutes, we're going to taste that on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. We're hanging out. We got Jeff O'Neill from Peekskill, Mike Philbrook from Port Chef, and a cast of characters, Brooklyn Magazine, TalkBeer.com. And we're talking about the best IPAs in New York, and now we're talking about how to judge IPAs. So, Mike, tell us, you brought a special beer.
Yeah, so the guys from Finback were nice enough to bring over some growlers of their IPAs today. And I asked them to do that because I was their IPAs were unavailable when we were putting together the beers for the blind taste test. So I felt bad because I've had it before and I really like it. So I would have liked it to be included. But that couldn't happen. So instead, we will try it here now.
Okay.
I'm going to pour myself some and maybe I'll just pass it around. I don't know who's got empty glasses.
Yeah. So who wants to talk about tasting beer? So you guys, you tasted the IPAs for Brooklyn Magazine your way. Jeff, how do you taste the beer? Because you're complicated.
It's complicated, Jimmy. Well, you put it in your mouth. Oh, well, first, of course, you smell it. And with IPAs, the number one thing is the aroma and what's gonna follow behind that. So I'd like to have some of this before we get too far into it. And I don't know. I must say, I don't know much about Finback.
But this does smell nice. It smells nice and fresh. Glendale, Queens. They're a new brewery from this year. And they're that new generation New York City breweries that's opening with a full-size brewery. And they got a lot of potential. They're doing good stuff. Just getting their feet out there.
Well, it has that big tangerine nose.
They're hitting the street on their own, too. I run into them around town.
Yeah, self-distributing.
So, great. So I think that's a very important thing, especially when you're starting off. You get that feedback right back to the, you know, to the source.
We know about Basil and Kevin. They're great. They're award-winning home brewers before that. They really paid their dues. They raised the money to open a brewery, and they're working really hard. So cheers to them.
Yeah.
I know Basil actually dropped off these growlers for
that's
you,
great.
Michael. So And that's the way a lot of guys are starting. You know, and even Mike from Porch F, we first met, you were self-distributing too.
Yeah, that's right. So we did in this, you know, I still self-distribute on the island. We have a distribution in the city now. It's just makes a little more sense to have somebody else hike it from.
Oh, you are working with somebody now.
Yeah, in the city. It's called Grapes and Greens. It's a division of J. King. So they carry our beer. They carry a cider, and they carry Long Island as well.
Oh, great.
In the city, so throughout all the boroughs.
Yeah, and the cider's great. It's Crits Farms, Harvest Moon from Harvest Moon.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, it's good.
Yeah, so. Really good stuff.
Now, Empire Brewing uses a lot of their produce.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in their beers and in their restaurant.
Yeah, good stuff. Mm-hmm. Interesting ciders. They blend various things into the cider.
Oh, that's interesting.
They tend to be less sweet, which I kind of like.
Yeah, no, that's a great trend. Dry ciders in New York. So, Gene and Oz, so you guys talk beer. If you're on a rating site for beer, how would you guys judge this?
Well, if I were on a rating site for beer, first of all, I would have probably tried this blind, because I think one of the biggest things anybody can do to educate themselves about how to taste anything, especially beer, where there's so much going on, and beer is interesting because there's so much hype and there's so much backstory behind everything you drink. Blind tasting tells you a lot about yourself, and it tells you a lot about your assumptions about things that you're tasting, and it tells you a lot about how your mind is going to play tricks on you and tell you that you're not tasting things that you are, or that you are tasting things that you're not. So that first and foremost, that's
or
one thing I want to stress.
Or you don't know what you're talking about.
Or you don't know what you're talking about, yeah.
Which usually happens when I taste blind.
and that's fine. Most of us don't know what we're talking about let alone when trying to do something as complicated as tasting beer. I think the freshness, again, going back to the freshness with an IPA is so critical. And this, you can tell, is just super, super fresh. When you can almost pull like a chive or onion sort of note right out of the back of that hop nose, you know it's super, super fresh. And I guess that kind of sounds a little unpleasant, but I think anybody who's really into that knows what I'm talking about. That summit sort
maybe
of
chlorophyll, like it's a plant smell.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe, yeah,
of the earth. Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be – that's right where I would go if I was describing this beer. I would start at the nose and go from there, because it's all about that for me. It's really
– Can I ask how you would taste beer blind at home?
Well, you have to usually taste more than one if you're going to do it. My wife is really very supportive about
she blindfolds him. That's what she does. Handcuffs and blindfolds.
Yeah. It's the only way I can convince her to blindfold me, yeah.
This isn't that kind of show.
Earlier today, the food scene had on My Drunk Kitchen lady, so, you know.
I can't believe I missed her.
I know. If she was on, we can talk about
blindfolding. I have such a crush on her.
She's probably right out there now at the bar at Roberta's.
She's probably eating.
Hanging out. Waiting to hang out with you, Jeff. But.
Yeah, no, it's something everybody should try. Convince somebody that you're, you know, or work with a couple friends who are also into it. And do some blind tastings and take notes and be honest, and you'll be better for it, you know, after you've done it a couple times. And taste really similar stuff, like a couple different kinds of Pilsner. And taste things that are very challenging and that you expect to mess up on, or that you really think it should be obvious, and you'll be amazed sometimes at what you think you're tasting when you're really not.
Do you? I mean, what are the awards that really matter? I mean, there's GABF, there's TAP New York. I mean, you guys as brewers, Mike and Jeff, is there anything you want to win or do well at? Because
you never want to lose.
Right.
It never hurts your feelings to win an award, right? I think the GABF and World Beer Cups awards are really rigorous, really relevant. TAP New York is great because it's a different cross section of beer. Like that's a lot of fun because it's everybody in New York together. There are so many awards now that it's hard to keep track of all of them. But there's none that hurt your business.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, like Jeff said, with GABF and World Beer Cup, there's, you know, there's some festivals do a competition like TAP New York, and there's Hudson Valley beer fest or what have you yet. But so they don't, they certainly don't hurt your business. They can help your business. I know, like Captain Lawrence initially when they got their first GABF medals said it helped great, you know, for business. And
but it's always a beer you're out of.
Of course. And then, and they're very subjective too, because, you know, you have to have, like, we're prepping now for GABF, you know, coming up in October, and so the beers have to be in at a certain time, and it's, well, you can't necessarily have all the beers exactly where you want them to be. You send them a month before they actually get judged, so when you're talking about IPAs, you know, and you, I would imagine most of the IPAs getting tasted there have a little cheese character to them because they're all a month and a half old. You know, to, in other words, the hops have degraded to some degree. So there's a lot of things to think about with regards to that when you're entering beer into competition. And then, you know, again, is it really worth all that, or is it worth making good beer every day?
So. No, I would love to say that we had a great article written about one of our beers in the New York Times this summer. That reaches more people. Like, the Beer Awards is a very, you know, it's going to, that news is only going to reach a select few number of people. No new customers, right? Like, nobody who's not indoctrinated into craft beer knows about the GABF. But when it crosses over into mainstream media, we all win.
Right. Even something like the Brooklyn Mag thing here.
Oh, of course.
It's like, you know, we've, there's definitely been hype. And of course, that came out like the day we ran out of Party Boat.
Of course. that's how it always works.
Yeah, right. Thankfully, we actually canned like, you know, a couple days before, but we literally ran out that.
Are you using a mobile canning guy?
We use we use the mobile canning unit. He's great. The beer cans are sexy. The beer tastes great. We wanted to try the can, so we started doing that this summer. I think the first day we canned was June 4th. I happened to have my fourth kid the same day, it's been great for us. That type of package, especially being on an island where a lot of people boat, they go to the beach, things like that. It's been tremendous for us. And then it's a, you know, it's even good for on premise type of accounts too, because you can have the beer in a can. Which seems to be a growing segment of the craft market. More people are accepting of beer in a can. So.
Are you canning anything else?
We're not canning anything else at the moment, but we will be shortly. So
cool.
Yes.
I've seen a lot of hype around canned beers lately, and canned beer seems to get a lot of mainstream attention. I'm just segueing here to a couple cans of beer that are sitting in the fridge over there.
Let's open them up before we go.
Yeah, Carton Brewing in Jersey, because Oz and I obviously very partial to our home state breweries.
That's another one I wanted to include, that 07 whatever it
that
is.
The 077XX, yeah.
I think next year, everyone in this room should sit in with you and help you pick the beers.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe we need to judge 20 IPAs.
Maybe.
Will you do the IPA again, or will it be a different beer style?
Well, I have dreams of doing it with a darker beer for the fall.
Oh, that's great.
But we'll see.
So it'll be a regular. Was this the first one?
This was the first one we did, and it was, you know, it was pretty successful and this, fun, certainly.
To get the band back together for
Get the band back together, yeah.
So, Jeff, talking about dark beers, if you were going to make a dark beer that you would want, a style that you would want Brooklyn Magazine to do a competition in, what style would that be? Or a style that you'd like to make?
You know, we made a Baltic Porter last year that was really, really quite a nice beer. And it's not over the top. Decent alcoholic strength. That's maybe an underrepresented style. We do a stout in the springtime. But it's got to be something that more, you know, everybody's making an IPA. Yeah. Not everybody has a stout every day of the week.
Exactly.
Right?
That's the problem with that approach. We'll see.
And Mike, you have some dark beers too, right?
We do. We get a lot of success with our dark beers. Our porter has probably more of the regular handles that we have in bars as our porter versus anything else. We thought it would be the pale ale.
You know, there's a couple of dark styles. I'd love to see more porters. And I don't know if they're hard to make. I'd love to see some kind of dunkels. I like a little color in beer.
Yeah. So make a porter, make a stout, but I think porters actually, from a brewer's perspective, are kind of easy to make because you don't have to worry a whole lot about haze, and you know they're fairly forgiving. But you know, once you get the craft down, you make it right. It's a great beer. So,
all right, hey Gene and Oz, why don't you guys say a few last things about talkbeer.com? It's kind of cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is. It's a very cool community. We didn't intend for it to be a big thing. It's growing like crazy. People really are digging it. It's just a whole lot of people who are really, truly, deeply into craft beer as kind of their first love, or, you know, at least that they wouldn't tell their actual first love. but no, I mean, it's a lot of great people. It's a lot of great people with really intentions to make a much more positive impact on the community. We kind of felt like online beer culture was straying a long way from what it had always been in real life, which was just this positive, mutually beneficial community of cool people trying to do cool stuff. And that's what we strive to be online now. So it's a good thing.
All right. Cool. Hey, this is a great show. It covered a lot of bases. Mike, thanks for including us in your Brooklyn Magazine Best IPAs. And
yeah, of course.
And thanks, Jeff,
for including
and
us.
And Mike from Fort Jeff. And
congratulations.
Talk Beer and all these guys. Special event coming up, our 5th annual Pig Island event. It's all about New York State pig farmers. We got 27 chefs. I work with Six Point and New York State Cider and Winemakers. It's a special event. PigIsland.com, September 6th. Check it out. In closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Mike, Chief, Mike, Oz, Gene, and someone else, Greg, and Oz's dad.
Thanks, so, Jimmy.
Thanks for coming on the show. For joining me on Heritage Radio Network, I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, and our engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.